are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
The Falcons made the Super Bowl last year, and the fact that they lost in just dramatic fashion was pretty self-serving.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits. I got nothing to sell except maybe my body.
Maybe? Are you sure it's maybe? Or?
Well, I mean, I would, but I don't think anyone wants it, so.
I don't know. You'd be surprised.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I'm the opposite, because I hate the Patriots, and I live in Boston, and the cheer I heard around my apartment after that game was not acceptable.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 97 of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits football podcast. I am your host, Mike Werner. You can reach me on Twitter, at Mike Werner, FWFB. And joining me today is my good friend, my good pal, Eli Rosenzweig. Eli, how's it going, bud?
It's going better now that Justin's not on this podcast.
Yeah, he was originally supposed to be on, but we just essentially booted him out, and I think we're very, very happy for it.
No, actually, I'm kind of bummed about it, because then I have to talk more, and then I get exposed as someone who knows nothing.
Exposed. Well, I think it's a good division to talk with you and I, because obviously I'm a Buccaneer fan. It's the NFC South, so I think we should get started. Please rate and review the show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, any of the podcast aggregators. It helps us out. Justin has a bunch of swag that he's still waiting to give away. I have some mugs and some shirts that are available on the site for purchase, and I have a few that I can give away as well. So send a 5-star screenshot to myself or Justin, or you, Eli, if you...
I got nothing to sell except maybe my body.
Maybe? Are you sure it's maybe? Or?
Well, I mean, I would, but I don't think anyone wants it, so...
I don't know. You'd be surprised. But yeah, give us a 5-star review, and we will definitely hook you up. But let's talk about the NFC South. So first and foremost, I think one of the biggest topics from the NFC South last year was Matt Ryan. And the first thing on our show sheet that Justin gave us is, will Matt Ryan regress? So I ask you, Eli, is Matt Ryan in for a down year compared to last season?
I mean, probably, yeah. I think it's not fair to expect someone to duplicate one of the better QB seasons we've seen in a long time. Kyle Shanahan's gone as the play caller. It seemed like Ryan got a little bit lucky in terms of his receivers dropping passes at a historically low rate, and they also had a historically high yards after the catch. So, I mean, Matt Ryan could be just as good this year as he was last year, but his numbers might suffer. And, you know, no shame in that. It's hard to duplicate the year he had, but he's still obviously an elite quarterback either way.
Yeah, I don't think the efficiency will be the same. And right now, Matt Ryan is going in the top 50 picks ahead of Andrew Luck, ahead of Cam Newton, ahead of Russell Wilson. I'm not willing to go that route. And mind you, I've never been a massive Matt Ryan fan. But if you look at his season last year, the efficiency was off the charts. The fact that he had multi-touchdown games in every single one except four is really good as well. The defenses in the NFC South are a little bit better, I'll say that. So maybe that will kind of, you know, go into his value for this season. But overall, I feel like he's going to end up finishing as a top 10 guy. He's going as a top 5 guy in drafts, and I'm willing to kind of forego any type of shares on Matt Ryan, unless the price kind of presents itself in the middle of a draft or the auction. You know, if he ends up going for a discount, then I'm willing to go that route. But at least for now, he had a couple of really nice starts last year against teams that, you know, really defensively weren't as good as you might think. And, you know, while this is, you know, the second year under a brand new coach and everything, I just don't really believe in it being this good long term. I mean, we were talking about before the season last year, we were talking about Matt Ryan as a guy that might not even be a top 10 quarterback anymore. And then all of a sudden he shoots into the top 3. So I just think that he's bound to regress. It's not really something that we should not expect. Anything else on Matt Ryan?
No, like you, I'd probably, if he goes for a discount, yeah, I'm all over it. But in the general sense, I prefer to wait on my quarterbacks. I think you're the same way.
All right, so last season, Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman had what we thought was a timeshare going into the year. And then Devontae Freeman, you know, continued to be a stud. He was the number 6 running back in PPR formats last season. Tevin Coleman also played a role. So I ask you, Eli, where are you going to take somebody like Freeman and Coleman this year? Are you going to take them both together? Are you looking at them as separate assets? What's your take on both of them?
This is a tough one. I got Freeman ranked, I think, 6th among my running backs and Coleman 28th, and that's exactly where they're both going in ADP among running backs. So I think they're both going for a fair price. I was actually going to ask you the same question. If you take Freeman, do you feel like you have to take Coleman? Or if you're only taking one, what do you prefer in terms of value?
I'm kind of not touching the situation at all, because I feel like whenever I'm going into a season, I'm looking at every team as if they're going to stay healthy. And mind you, there's going to be injuries that happen, and it happens all the time, and you kind of luck into that. But if I'm looking at the Falcons, and if they're going to stay healthy all season, I don't think you get a running back one out of either of them. I think that both of them could be serviceable running back twos for the majority of the season if they both stay healthy. But at least as of right now, I'm not really looking to draft either of them. I mean, Devontae Freeman is a top 11 pick right now in regular standard formats. He's the 5th running back in ESPN. He's the 6th in the fantasy football calculator. It's just a lot to really pay for somebody that, yes, he's been great and I love the guy, but I just can't expect the same efficiency from the Falcons offense. Also, Tevin Coleman is going as a top 70 pick. I would rather take Doug Martin, who's going a little bit ahead of him. Amir Abdullah has the opportunity to be a running back one on his own, in my opinion, this year. Paul Perkins, we talked about last episode. There's a lot of other guys that I would rather go with that I know are going to be in somewhat of a timeshare, but not a completely split one the whole season. So if I had to pick one, I would go with Freeman just because he's been stellar the last couple of years, but I'm not really looking to target the situation.
Yeah, I love Freeman as well. I'm probably going to avoid this situation as well. I mean, this is probably the best 1-2 punch of running back in the entire NFL, right?
Yeah, so I would say so.
I mean, yeah, so it's so hard for one of them to be so dominant to, like, you know, you need Freeman to be a consistent running back one just about every single week to justify the draft cost. And this is going to be tough when he's got the best backup in the entire NFL right behind him.
Yeah, and the thing about the two of them is none of them, whenever I'm drafting a running back that early, and this is why I'm not really drafting Freeman in the first round, is because I want a guy that's going to 100% touch the ball 30 times. Even Jay Ajayi, if you don't feel like he is as talented as Devontae Freeman, which is fair, he's still going to touch the ball 30 times because Miami needs him to. Devontae Freeman, especially when Tevin Coleman was healthy for the last few weeks of the season and such, he definitely put up numbers, but he wasn't getting the ball more than 20 times. You know, it was right around there. Last game of the season against New Orleans, 17 times. The game before that, he got it 21 times, 22 the game before that. So if my ceiling for Devontae Freeman to get touches is at 20, and I don't think that the Falcons are going to have the same efficiency this season, then I just don't expect for the numbers to stay the same. I will say Coleman is going at a much more economical price, and in PPR formats, he gets targeted. I mean, he had multiple targets in every single game but one last year that he played in. He also had 3 receptions in each of the last 2 games, multiple receptions in 5 of the last 6 last year, 3 receiving touchdowns. I mean, like, he offers a different kind of avenue for value than a lot of other running backs do. But at the same time, Freeman has the same skill set. So all in all, I think we're spending a long time on saying that both these guys are quality players and they're worth drafting. I just don't think you're going to get one feature back out of the group. Fair?
Yeah, I think that's perfectly well said. Yeah, I completely agree with that assessment.
All right, so Taylor Gabriel was obviously somewhat of a revelation last year, especially at the end of the season. So I ask you, Eli, is there another receiver to own from this group other than Julio Jones? Just to kind of go through it, you have guys like Mohamed Sanu still there, Taylor Gabriel. You also have Andre Roberts, Nick Williams. Is there anybody else other than Julio that you are looking to target in this whole entire wide receiver core?
No, I don't think so. There's just not enough targets to go around. Between Julio Jones and both, like you said, Devontae and Tevin both catch a ton of passes. So you got Julio Jones, 2 running backs that catch a ton of passes. That leaves not a lot of targets for guys that are pretty much equally talented. And Gabriel, Sanu, Hardy, and the tight end Hooper. They just have too many guys that aren't talented enough to get a lion's share of the touches after the other main guys. So if anyone were to emerge, or I guess it would be Gabriel. He showed some flashes, but I don't think he's all that great. So I think he's going way too high in drafts right now. People think he's going to break out. I don't think that's going to happen. So I'm avoiding anyone else.
Yeah, I'm not really in on anybody else either. If I was going to be in on a guy, it would be Justin Hardy in deep, deep formats, just because I've always been intrigued by him. He's a really solid slot receiver. So he's somebody that I'm looking towards. Gabriel is still going at a very economical cost. I mean, he's outside the top 50 wide receivers. He's going 140th overall, essentially, right around guys like Quincy Enunwa, Tyrell Williams, Ted Ginn. I still like Tyrell Williams, but it's still somebody that I can see, you know, having less points than Gabriel. Gabriel, the thing that I look for with him is that he just got targeted a ton to end the season. You know, from week 9 on, he received 5 or more targets in every game except one, and that was in week 16. He just turned all of his targets into touchdowns. If I was to dig into it, I bet his touchdown percentage on receptions was among the leaders in the league. You know, 4 receptions, 2 touchdowns in week 12. 3 receptions, 1 touchdown in week 14, 3 receptions, 1 touchdown in week 15. There's just, again, I just don't think the offense as a whole for the Falcons has the same efficiency. And I agree. If I was going to go with somebody, it would be Gabriel. But I do want to keep Hardy in the back of my mind, because in deep PPR formats, which I played in a couple of them, 14 and 16 team leagues that are PPR, guys like Justin Hardy are little gems that you can get later on that cost nothing. That might be a little bit intriguing as the season goes on. So I'll just throw him out there.
What do you think about Austin Hooper? I know he didn't really play much as a rookie, only caught 19 balls, but Jacob Tammy's gone, and you know, Matt Ryan throws a ton, and the tight ends are going to be overlooked because everyone has to focus on Jones and the running back. So do you think Hooper could be like a cheap borderline one, like, you know, weak tight end one?
Yeah, he's not on our notes or anything, but I do think that he has a little bit of intrigue. You know, there was a few weeks last year where he was serviceable, and he did it against teams that really were pretty solid against the tight end position as well. I think that he takes another step forward this year, and he's a guy that nobody is talking about. I think right now he's going outside the top 150. Yeah, he's going 171st right now as the 21st tight end on ESPN. Yeah, I mean, I think that he's definitely intriguing, somebody that I would look for. The problem is, you have guys like Jared Cook and Antonio Gates and Dwayne Allen and even other rookies that are going ahead that you could make a case to draft instead. But yes, I mean, to answer your question, I think Hooper is interesting. It wouldn't surprise me if he found his way into the top 10. And, you know, this happens every year. Some tight end just goes unnoticed and untalked about the whole offseason and then emerges in the middle of the year to be a pretty decent option. So, yeah, I think Austin Hooper is a good name. Let's move on from the Falcons, because I'm a Buccaneer fan. And I can't stand the fact that the Falcons made the Super Bowl last year, and the fact that they lost in just dramatic fashion was pretty self-serving, I gotta say.
Well, I'm the opposite, because I hate the Patriots, and I live in Boston, and the cheer I heard around my apartment after that game was not acceptable for me.
All right, so let's move on to the New Orleans Saints, and the first question we have on here is Drew Brees a bust? So, Eli, I'll kick it to you. Is Drew Brees a bust? I'm assuming compared to his draft cost this year, which right now his draft cost is the 35th overall pick, third quarterback off the board. Do you think Brees, for him to be a bust, he would have to finish outside, I'd say, the top 10 quarterbacks? Do you think he finishes outside the top 10?
Well, no, I don't think he finishes outside the top 10. I do think it's going a little too early. I know it's completely reasonable that he's going third considering the long track record of success and how often they throw the ball in New Orleans, but I have him fifth among quarterbacks. Obviously, he's still great, but, you know, he's 38 now. He lost Brandon Cooks. He's got a pretty good running game in Ingram and Peterson. I think he's still great, but I'm not touching
him. Yeah, I haven't found myself drafting him thus far, but that doesn't mean I think he's a bust. I'm thinking, though, that the Saints offense moves to a more run-heavy approach. And that doesn't mean that I think that they end up with more running attempts than passing attempts. Because, I mean, last year, if you look at their total offense, they still had the most plays ran among any team in football. So even if they did move to a more run-heavy scheme, I think that the Saints are still going to be a high-flying offense that is up there in pace and continues to, you know, get a good amount of passing attempts as well. But at the same time, if you add somebody like AP, you have a guy like Mark Ingram on the roster, you're looking to run the ball a little bit more, in my opinion. And when you look at it that way, I don't think they end up with the second most pass attempts. So if you think that they're going to be more of a top 10 pass attempts per game unit, then I think Drew Brees ends up being like a, what, 7th to 9th quarterback, you know, when we look at it, when it's all said and done. Last year, he was the second quarterback in fantasy points per game, right ahead of Matt Ryan. I can see him being, you know, 6th, 7th, somewhere in there, just because he doesn't offer anything in the run game as well, and we have a few more quarterbacks that do. Zubon, what do you do with the running backs in New Orleans? We already kind of touched on this earlier when we talked about kind of the Adrian Peterson signing and everything like that. So I'll ask you, I mean, I'll tell you flat out, I'm not really interested in any of them. Mark Ingram, AP, Daniel Lasco, any of them. I just have no interest. How about you?
I have no interest in Peterson. To me, the fact that he's going 27th among running backs on ADP is crazy. It's way too early. Guy's 32 years old. He's only played one season in the last three. He's got an elite running back in Ingram behind ahead of him on the depth chart. They also drafted Alvin Kamara, who's probably got to get some looks here and there. I just don't get – Peterson's is like a cheap insurance policy that the Saints got. They got him on a discount for all the reasons that I just mentioned. I do have some interest in Ingram. I know having Peterson behind him scares people to think that he's going to get less touches, but Ingram's been pretty damn consistent, pretty solid on the field. He can do a little bit of everything. He's on a great offense. He's scored a good amount of touchdowns. I'm still – about Ingram, and some people, if he falls a little bit in drafts, I'm going to pounce on him like I always do.
He's not going that much further down than AP, which I think is criminal in itself. They're about going in the same spot. Like on the fantasy football calculator, it's a pretty big difference, but on ESPN, it's not as wide of a margin between the two. But in general, I'm taking Ingram over AP. I feel like this is going to be a timeshare all year long, a running back by committee type deal. AP might get more attempts, but Ingram might be more efficient in the red zone. I can foresee it being a headache. They both could be injury prone. I mean, they both have questionable tags every week. I can foresee this being an absolute headache. But if you are of the mind that Drew Brees is not going to pass the ball as much this season and that they're going to rely on Ingram and Peterson mainly on the offensive end, I guess you could do worse. If you're picking between the two, Mark Ingram has fresher legs and he's younger, so I'm going to go with Ingram. How about this, Eli? Is Michael Thomas, with Brandon Cooks leaving, a first-round pick to you?
No. That's too early. I know, although it's kind of reasonable if you think about it. He was the number 7 receiver last year in fantasy as a rookie. And he missed a game, and he had Brandon Cooks to contend with. I mean, that's kind of incredible what he was able to accomplish. I just don't think he's going to be – I mean, I always get confused on these. So he loses Cooks, so he goes from the number 2 receiver to the number 1. But does that ultimately help him? I don't know if it helps him or hurts him, or does it just kind of neutralize? What do you think on those situations?
I think that his target share is going to go up. So I think that he will get targeted more, but I also think that his efficiency might go down a bit.
Right, because he was targeted more.
Yeah, and he was targeted heavily in the red zone last year as well. So I think that we will continue to see him targeted in the red zone, and we'll continue to see his target share go up. But I think when you're looking at the offense as a whole, this is a big boost for somebody like Willie Snead. Willie Snead is kind of the forgotten man here. And, you know, Ted Ginn is also rolling around there. I don't think Brandon Coleman is that special. So I've heard his name a couple times this offseason, and I'm just really not buying it. I would say the people that are buying it are people that think that the Saints are going to continue to have a big, big passing share in their offense. And I think they're going to scale it back a bit. But I think the big winners from looking at the offense as a whole is Willie Snead and Colby Fleener. Michael Thomas, you're not going to get for any type of discount, but Fleener and Snead, you can. And those are the guys I would buy from this offense if I believe that the Saints are going to continue to throw, which I do. I think they're going to continue to throw the ball as much as they can, even though they've made some strides on defense, and they should be able to get a little bit better at managing the game script a bit so that they can run the ball more. I still think that Fleener and Snead are the guys. But to answer your question about Thomas, I love Thomas. I think that he is just so mature and so polished for being such a young receiver that I can't really foresee him having a down year. I don't necessarily think he'll repeat what he did last year, which was the number 7 receiver in PBR scoring, but he had the most red zone attempt or targets in the New Orleans Saints wide receiver core, and that includes their tight ends as well. He's somebody that just got a good target share already, so I mean, I think that it's really tough to envision Thomas really slipping that much.
Yeah, I think he finishes right around. I think he has similar numbers to what he had last year, which, I mean, makes him a stud, but doesn't necessarily make him a first-round pick. He caught 77% of his targets last year. There's no way he's going to be able to duplicate that with way more focus on him on opposing defenses. And like you said, Willie Snead. I love Willie Snead. I love the guys that don't catch a ton of touchdown passes, because I know that's weird to say, but those guys always get overlooked and people forget about, you know, the slot receivers and the guys who just catch a ton of passes for short yardage. Snead, Julian Edelman, Cole Beasley. I feel like you can get so much value on guys like that because you get them at a good, a pretty good price, and they consistently give you solid production. They never kill you. They might not win you weeks, but they never lose you weeks.
Yeah, and I just want to say with Ted Ginn too, I think that he's going to be like Devery Henderson 2.0. Like Drew Brees still has a pretty good deep ball, and Ted Ginn's 100% going to go flying around out there. I think that he's going to end up screwing a couple people that think Michael Thomas is in a perfect spot for DFS, and Ted Ginn ends up catching two touchdown passes for like 60 yards apiece and ends up screwing everybody's day. It's going to happen for sure at any point. Is there any other pass catchers worth owning other than Michael Thomas, Willie Snead? Is Kobe Fleener on your radar in any way, or are you interested in Brandon Coleman? Anybody else that you're looking at?
Fleener's a guy with a lot of talent who hasn't really got... He's always kind of had to share time with someone else, Dwayne Allen or whatever. So the fact that he's on got an elite quarterback, no one behind him on a great offense, you got to think he's going to be pretty solid. I think he's like, you know, an elite tight end too. Someone you can get at a good price in like, you know, 5 or so weeks, he'll be put up big numbers for you. So I think he's solid.
All right, let's move on to Carolina. And last season, Cam Newton was one of the highest drafted quarterbacks. He ended up finishing outside the top 15 at the position. He ended up finishing 17th. This year in drafts, he is going in the top 10. Once again, 80th overall when you look at the averages, 7th quarterback. Are you back in on Cam?
A little bit. I think what's going to happen is he's going to be a better quarterback, but it won't necessarily translate to better fantasy production. I could see his passing, his accuracy going up, his passing yardage going up, but I think he's going to run significantly less this time. I think they need to keep him healthy. They got, you know, McCaffrey and Stewart, and they got other guys that can run the ball. They're going to try to protect Cam. So maybe his passing will improve, the running will go down, and then, you know, his fantasy production is basically equals out. So I don't think he's going to be a stud like he used to be, where he'd run for like 800 yards and 8 touchdowns or whatever, but he's still going to be pretty solid.
I just want to say that Cam Newton's throwing has just not been good the last few years. That's not include. I mean, I know he had shoulder surgery and he's getting past all of that, but if he's not rushing, then I'm certainly worried about that from a fantasy perspective, because I mean, he got 5 rushing touchdowns last year, and that was part of the reason that he stayed in the top 20 quarterbacks, you know, let alone trying to look for him to be a top 10 guy. But you know, in general, I want to go back to the well with Cam Newton, because he is somebody that the first few years of his career, he just was an automatic top 5 option. And Carolina has supplemented their offense with multiple pieces that can really help them out. So I think that Cam Newton is a worthwhile option for drafters this year. I mean, the fact that he's going in the top 10 isn't really much of a discount, but if he's going to lose rushing attempts, I am a little bit worried about that. So in general, I like him, but I'm not making a firm stance to go out and get him right now. I would rather just kind of wait on quarterback if I'm going to end up picking from the middle tier anyways, or I would just jump up top, because really the difference is pretty strong between somebody of, you know, Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady, and then waiting on somebody like, you know, Derek Carr or Ben Roethlisberger or somebody like that. So I'm either going to be waiting or going up top with it.
I think it's I just think he's going to be a lot better with the passing. I think he was a little unlucky last year. I think Benjamin's going to be a little bit better. He's got one of the best tight ends in football. McCaffrey will be a dynamic option to throw to. And I'm, you know, they say he's going to dial back the running, and I'm sure he will. But with all those weapons on the field, there's going to be room for him to run. And he'll still get some touchdowns there. So I think he's going to be pretty great.
Well, and Carolina's offensive line isn't that great. That's part of it, too. So, you know, hopefully McCaffrey kind of helps the offense as a whole, because they'll be able to run just quick shuffle passes or, you know, little screens out of the flat or whatever. But at the same time, the Carolina offense isn't protecting Cam, then that's a problem to me as well. In general, I'm not trying to, you know, paint him with a negative picture or anything like that. I just think that there is risk compared to the last few years when we've been able to just wholeheartedly go back to the well with somebody like Cam Newton. This year, I think there's a little bit more risk to it, but I still, when it's all said and done, I still think he's going to end up being a top 10 guy, and I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up shooting back up into the top 5 realm as well. Let's talk about their running back situation. Jonathan Stewart and Christian McCaffrey are probably going to be duking it out a little bit. There's been some chatter that McCaffrey won't have as big of a role as people might think, but I'm going to ask you, Eli, if you had to choose between the two, who would you go with? And at the end of the year, who do you think ends up with more points?
Yeah, in terms of drafting someone, I'm way more likely to draft Stewart this year. McCaffrey's going 14th among running backs. It's just too early. It's too risky. I know there's been some success with rookie running backs lately, but that's just he's just not like a true. He's more of like a hybrid kind of player. Those kind of guys scare me, because I don't think there's going to be a lot of value in his running. It's going to be more PPR kind of based. I think Jonathan Stewart's going to steal a ton of McCaffrey's touchdowns. I think Cam Newton's going to steal some of McCaffrey's touchdowns. And I don't want to draft a running back in the top 14 if he's not going to be a workhorse and a guy that gets a ton of touchdowns. I just don't see how McCaffrey can be either of those things.
Yeah, I'm off McCaffrey wholeheartedly right now. And it's honestly just the price. You know, you already mentioned that he's going as the 14th running back, and that's just way too rich for me. On a team with Carolina that, while their offense can be dynamic, I just don't trust. For if you're drafting McCaffrey up there, especially in PPR formats, you are counting on him getting you, what, 50, 60 receptions, yeah, at least? Something like that. And I just can't feel comfortable with that, at least right now. I think that he's a solid player, and I think from a talent perspective, he's certainly a worthwhile gamble if you're looking, you know, in supplemental drafts or rookie drafts that you're participating in. Yes, I like McCaffrey from that angle, but from a regular season fantasy football redraft angle, I think he's going a little bit too rich. I would rather go with Carlos Hyde a couple of picks later. I would rather go Joe Mixon and see if I can kind of catch lightning in a bottle with him. Spencer Ware, I wouldn't necessarily draft before him, but Ty Montgomery has upside. Like, there's a lot of options after McCaffrey that I just feel a little bit better about. In terms of Stewart, he is going outside the top 100 overall. He is the 42nd running back when you look at it. And this is a guy that even last season got all of the red zone touches. I mean, Cam Newton ended up getting a ton of them, which was obvious. But other than him, Jonathan Stewart was the guy getting the rock inside the 10-yard line, 20-yard line. And I think that will continue this year. And at the same time, he was also getting 20-plus touches a game. So, no, I don't think that you can project Stewart to get another 20 touches a game this year. And obviously, the injury concern is massive with him. But when you're paying a 9th, 10th round pick for him, if he ends up being a running back 2 or flex option for you for a ton of the weeks this year, that's well worth it, in my opinion. So not really suited for PPR formats, but in standard, I think Stewart has the upside to be a running back 2, back end running back 2 this year. And I'm willing to take that gamble on him. So I think you and I are in lockstep on that.
Oh yeah, I'm all over Stewart. The price is too good. Even if McCaffrey turns out to be a stud and we're both wrong on how good McCaffrey is this year, Stewart will still get a ton of red zone looks and he'll get some work. So at that price, I'm you're not going to lose out. You might get really lucky.
And that's the thing too, is like, we always go back to upside. Like, whenever you're drafting a player, you want to get massive upside. And I'm the first one to say that. Like, I want to build a team that is filled with juggernauts that I can crush you with. But sometimes upside can be just small, you know, like, even though Stewart isn't going to give you first round value, like, that's not the type of upside you're looking for. When you compare a pick like Joe Mixon, who you're looking, if he ends up really hitting, could be a first round type talent, you know, that's not the type of upside we're looking for with Stewart. But, you know, upside is relative. It depends on where you're picking guys. And I think Stewart really offers a good amount of that based on where he's going. That's enough on these running backs. I think we've gone way too long on it, but let me talk to you about Kelvin Benjamin, though, a guy at Florida State that I love to death. He obviously came into the league and did some pretty good things this year. Last year definitely tarnished his outlook going into this season. So I will ask you, Eli, are you back in on Kelvin Benjamin, who is right now going outside the top 60 wide receivers overall, or top 30 or 25 wide receivers, I'm sorry, and going as the 65th overall pick in front of guys like Emmanuel Sanders, Dante Moncrief, Stephon Diggs, Jamison Crowder? Are you willing to buy him at that price?
I think I am. I understand that people are frustrated with him. He's been just a little bit disappointing. He caught such a low percentage of his targets. And I know that he's got Olsen, he's going to get a ton of targets, and McCaffrey will get a lot of looks. But Benjamin's so talented. He's now 2 years removed from that ACL injury. He's clearly got elite size. I think he's got, he's going to get a ton of red zone looks. He's too talented of a receiver. I think he's going to have a bounce back season and be a good value for his price.
I agree. If I'm in a shallower format and I'm looking for lightning in a bottle, then I think I would take Benjamin where he's going. And I wouldn't mind if I'm a, you know, drafter and I'm waiting on wide receiver a little bit. You can go Kelvin Benjamin, Stephon Diggs back to back, or you can go Benjamin, Jameson Crowder back to back. Like, this is a really nice area for wide receivers here, anywhere between, you know, 65 and 80. It's a nice little cushion there for a few really good options, in my opinion. And Benjamin, his efficiency was off last year. I think that he was struggling making it back wholeheartedly from his injury past. there was a lot of things that were just kind of going against him. I think this will be a pivotal year with him. He might go one way, he might go the other. But in general, I'm willing to take the shot on Benjamin because he is just so massive. He's such a big guy, and he's such a wet red zone weapon that he could very easily end up with the most touchdowns on anybody of anybody on this offense, in my opinion. He didn't get targeted as much, and he also didn't get targeted as much in the red zone last year. But the Carolina offense was just off as a unit anyways. I think that we can kind of scrap last season in general and look forward, and Benjamin could be once again another high-end wide receiver too when it's all said and done. So I agree with that. How about Greg Olsen? Somebody that's been a top five tight end seemingly for 10 years now. Obviously it hasn't been, but he's once again going inside the top 50 picks, and he is the number four tight end overall. Do you think he's underrated right now, Eli?
Well, I think he's underrated. He's going fourth, but I have him ranked second among tight ends. He's had three straight 1,000-yard seasons. Last year it was a little fluky. Only had, like, I think three touchdowns, but in the previous eight seasons, he had at least five in all of those years. He's a big target. He's going to get some red zone looks. He's on an improving offense. He's about as consistent as they come. I'm willing to take him as a second tight end, although I prefer to typically wait on my tight ends. But if the price is good, I'm going to be all over this.
Yeah, he's another guy that I look for more in PPR formats just because he has been their number one pass game option. But I'm kind of foregoing any shares of him this year based on where he's going. I think McCaffrey is going to be a little bit of a hit to his value. And if I think that Kelvin Benjamin is going to get a big amount of that red zone role, as well as Jonathan Stewart, as well as Cam Newton, then it really doesn't leave that much for Olsen. I think that he will be fine in PPR formats. Like I said, I think he will have a stable 5 to 6 targets a game. But last year he scored 3 touchdowns, and I think we might see a marginal increase, maybe 5 touchdowns this year, which would be better, obviously, than 2016. But I'm really not expecting too much better from Olsen than last season. I think it'll be relatively the same, which was still a guy that, you know, in PPR formats was still a really good tight end. I mean, there's not a lot that I can say other than that. I mean, he was a top three option in PPR. So I still think he'll be a top three or top four option. I just don't think the touchdowns will be that great. Anything else you want to hit on from this Carolina offense, Eli? There's really not much else to talk about. I mean, you could talk about maybe, you know, Devin Funchess or Russell Shepard. I think Devin Funchess is mainly the only other guy that we really haven't touched on that we could say could have some relative value this year. Are you in on Funchess?
No, I used to be, but I think at this point he would have shown something, and he's yet to do so.
Yeah, I'm not a big Funchess fan. I think that he is a deep league option at best, but, you know, really it comes down to depth at that point. I think that is essentially what he is, a depth option. He did get 4 to 5 targets a lot last year, which is good. But at the same time, when you add McCaffrey, I can't really feel that confident that he's going to maintain that target share. So that's Carolina for you, people. Now let's go on to the real team. This is a Buccaneers show when it's all said and done. This is a Buccaneer podcast. And let's talk about Jameis Winston. Last year was a good jumping off point for him, a opportunity for him to finally emerge a bit, and he ended up being pretty much fulfilling what his draft cost was. He was going around the top 10 to 12 quarterbacks in drafts last year. He ended up as the number 11 quarterback in fantasy last season. So I'll ask you, Eli, do you think that Jameis Winston is ready to break out even more in 2017? And you better say the right answer.
I don't.
You asshole.
Yeah, I get it.
I'm just kidding.
Obviously, he's incredibly talented, and they added weapons with O.J. Howard and DeSean Jackson. So I understand that this is a possibility of him turning into an elite quarterback sooner rather than later. But I just didn't see enough strides in year two. Way too many turnovers. I mean, this guy is like 24 turnovers last year and only 29 touchdowns. That's just not going to get done. He's not very accurate. He's too turnover prone. He makes too many mistakes. He's obviously super talented. Like I said, better options on the passing game this year. So I get the appeal, and I get the chances of a breakout here. I'm just not going to bet on it.
You know what, Eli? I agree with you. I don't think that this will be a breakout season for him. I think his upside, until he gets the interceptions in check, is somewhat capped.
And the fumbles.
And the fumbles, yeah. While he makes some just amazing plays. He does things on the field from a football perspective that just really excites you. And I mean, from a Buccaneer fan perspective, I love the guy. I think that he is going to be one of the reasons that we can maybe make a really long run in the playoffs sometime in the next few years. But from a fantasy perspective, I feel like his upside is capped. He's kind of a Eli Manning-ish type quarterback, somebody that can certainly use his weapons and have really good games, you know, cited by his, you know, four plus touchdown games last year. He can definitely have those, you know, random spikes where he can do really well. But at the same time, from a fantasy angle, the Buccaneers offense is very balanced. They're going to continue to use Jacquizz Rodgers, who was by Pro Football Focus rated as a top 12 running back last year. And Jameis Winston by Pro Football Focus had a top or a bottom 20 grade. I'm sorry, he was 20th on their grading scale from a quarterback perspective, despite finishing as the 11th best fantasy option. So he's going 12th in draft right now at quarterback. Jameis Winston is. I think that's fair. I would rather wait than go with Winston. But to answer the question that's on the sheet, will he break out? I don't think he will. I think if we did see a breakout, it would be marginal. It would probably be where he finished in the top 8 or 9. And even that isn't enough for me to draft him where he's currently going. So this isn't a knock on Winston. Love the guy to death, but he's not somebody that I'm looking for fantasy. How about Doug Martin, Eli, somebody that I'm certainly willing to draft for fantasy? Are you in on him this year based on his cost?
Yeah, I like taking the suspended guys. I feel like they fall a little bit too far on draft boards. I really cashed in on Tom Brady last year. I know a lot of people cashed in on Le'Veon Bell. I think Martin's a good example of this. 36th running back off the board. I know at some point he's really frustrated to fantasy owners. It's been a couple years where you drafted him early and he completely burned you. But there's also been a couple years where he was a legit elite running back one. And I know Jacquizz Rodgers emerged a little bit last year, and Charles Sims is a pretty versatile back. He's going to get some third down looks. But I think once Martin comes back from suspension, he's going to be pretty solid, pretty reliable. He'll have some great weeks. And for the price that he's going, I mean, how often can you get a potential running back one as among he's going 36 off the board among running backs. So I'm taking that gamble. It's worth it.
Doug Martin is going to be one of the best draft values in fantasy this year, period, end of sentence. The whole offseason, since he got suspended, and if you don't know, he's going to be suspended the first 3 games of the season this year, and his whole offseason has been nothing but amazing. The Buccaneers organization, front office, has stood by him. They have given him so much praise for what he's done this offseason in terms of bettering himself, not only physically, but also mentally as well. From my accounts and all understanding, is in the best place in his life that he has ever been in. He has just completely turned around his life. And I honestly, throwing out football, I'm really happy for him for getting to that point, because it's really important that, you know, not just football players, but people in general just can become happy in their lives doing what they do and, you know, just being a good person in society. And I think Doug Martin was struggling with that for a few years. By all accounts, he is not anymore, and he's in a place that I'm really happy for him for being in. From a fantasy perspective, I'm buying every single day of the week based on where he's going. You already mentioned the numbers and where he's going in drafts. I'm willing to take that gamble every single day of the week. I think Jacquizz Rodgers is another guy that you need to target so that you can end up getting the whole entire Buccaneer backfield. They ran the ball a ton last year. They're going to continue to run the ball this year so that they can kind of take the pressure off Jameis Winston a good amount. And I think that Doug Martin's going to end up being somewhere. If you draft Doug Martin and Jacquizz Rodgers, I think both of them combined will finish somewhere near the top 12 running backs. And that's how strongly I feel about them. So there you go. Mike Evans, is he overrated, Eli? Because I don't think he is.
No, that's crazy. Justin making that a topic is a little crazy to me. He led the NFL in targets last year. He led the NFL in red zone targets. He's had at least 1,000 yards every season of his career. 2 of the 3 years, he's had 12 touchdowns. You know, I don't love Jameis Winston, but you got to think Winston will improve, so that only helps Evans. Also, with DeSean Jackson and O.J. Howard aboard, Evans will get less double teams. I mean, Evans got the size, the speed, the role, an improving quarterback. Yeah, I love Evans.
I don't think he's overrated. I don't think he necessarily gets the same targets that he got last year, which, like you already mentioned, was the highest among any receiver. But he's so big. He's also, it's an argument to be made that he's the most talented receiver in football. I'm not saying he is, but the fact that it's an argument to me doesn't say that he's overrated. It says that he still has the ability to grow. I mean, he's still a young guy. I don't really think that there's an argument to be made that he's overrated. I will say from a fantasy perspective, he's going in the top 10, which you'll have to pay for, obviously. But he's going behind Julio, Odell Beckham, Antonio Brown. 2 of those 3 guys have been somewhat injury prone, not saying Mike Evans hasn't been. But the offense, the quarterback, everything is staying the same. I think Evans is going to once again be a top five receiver, and that's all you can really ask for when you're drafting a guy in the top five like that. Mike Evans was the top overall receiver in targets last year, and I think that he will end up being probably around top 10 this year. So you can kind of look at it whatever way you want to from that angle, like, you know, saying that he's not going to get as many opportunities. But despite having the most targets among anybody, he still finished in front of Odell Beckham and Julio Jones in fantasy points in PPR. And I think that that could once again happen this year. So no, he is not overrated because he already beat Odell and Julio 1 year. OJ Howard or Cameron Brate, Eli?
Neither. I like the talent of both guys. They're both pretty solid. But we talked about this on the last podcast. Rookie tight ends just don't produce. It's so rare. I know he's got the talent to do so, but he's just not going to have the opportunity. Cameron Brate's pretty solid. OJ Howard's also a good blocker, so he's going to be on the field sometimes and not even be an option in the passing game. So, you know, obviously a nice dynasty asset for sure, but I'm not taking him this year in redraft leagues.
Yeah, I'm still a little bit intrigued by Cameron Brate. I don't think that you can look at these two guys and really get a tight end one out of one of them, but I think both of them as a whole will equate to a top 15 or better guy. You know, if you look at Brate last year, especially from like week 8 on, he ended up getting 6 touchdowns in his last 9 games. That's a really good thing to see. He also got four or more targets in every one of those games except for 3. So, you know, he was getting a good target share to end the season last year. And Jameis Winston loved targeting the tight end in college. He continues to love to target the tight end now. But he's not going to be – Brate is not going to be a consistent option. I think I already answered my question here. I like Brate more. He's essentially going free as well. He's going, you know, pick 160 right now. But O.J. Howard is irrelevant for this season. And right now he's going ahead of Brate. I completely disagree with that. While I think O.J. Howard – at some point, like I already mentioned a couple of shows ago, is going to be a top five tight end in fantasy at some point. It's not going to be this year. It's probably not going to be next year either. Well, I think the talent is there. Brate is the one that I would go with for this season alone. That's not a knock on O.J. Howard's talent. I think you and I are both in lockstep there as well.
Well, I was going to say, I love the price for Brate. He's getting way too big of a discount. I think people don't really believe in what he did last year. I don't think people think he's capable of duplicating the 660 yards and 8 touchdowns, and people think Howard's going to take away a ton of his targets, and I just don't think that's the case. So yeah, I think if you want to go get a pretty good tight end for wicked late in your drafts, Cameron Brate's the guy to target.
Chances are O.J. Howard, at least the first 5 games of the season, to me, is going to see like 30% of the snaps. And that's just the way that Dirk Cutter likes to operate. He doesn't give rookies big expanded roles to start off the year, because why would you? I mean, if you're, you know, imagine if you're a high school basketball coach and you picked up this kid that has all the talent in the world in middle school, you're not going to start him in your starting five, the first 5 games of this season, because he's not going to know the playbook well. He's not going to be refined in the way that he does things. Like, it just makes sense. So,
not only that, but they have a capable guy. I mean, it would be one thing if they had stiffs at the tight end position and they just threw the kid out there, but that's not the case. Brate's solid and he knows what he's doing out there.
Absolutely agree. So Brate is a very good tight end 2 option in 2 tight end formats, and he's also a really decent gamble in certainly deeper formats if you want to take a gamble on a guy that probably is pretty safe. I mean, I say gamble, but I think he's a pretty safe option. I mean, he might not end up with 10 touchdowns, but he will probably end up with 4 or 5, and he'll probably end up with 500 plus yards, and that's pretty good for where he's going.
I was just going to complain about fantasy. I just think that all leagues should be 2 tight end leagues. I just feel like most teams in the NFL these days have 2 tight ends on the field a lot of the times, and I think all fantasy leagues should be 3 receivers start and 2 tight ends. I know that's a little ridiculous, and it seems like way too many people starting, but that's just the way football is now. There's always 3 receivers on the field in real games, and there's usually 2 tight ends on the field. So I just think that's the way fantasy should be too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not opposed to it. It definitely makes it more challenging from a fantasy perspective, because getting a second guy is usually pretty tough to nail, but if you were going that route, if you're doing the 2 tight end strategy for this year, I think that if you're not going to go Gronk or Kelsey, then you wait a little bit and you go with somebody like Martellus Bennett. You go with Hunter Henry, Zach Ertz, we talked about before. I can't believe O.J. Howard is going after Zach Ertz in front of Jack Doyle, Julius Thomas, Jason Witten even. But that's I guess, how the cookie crumbles. I can't believe that. You know, O.J. Howard should not be going that high. But in general, I would take guys from the middle of the pack. But anything else from the Buccaneers that you want to mention, Eli? We talked about DeSean Jackson a couple of shows ago. I think from a fantasy perspective, he is ranked somewhat appropriately. But you have somebody like Adam Humphries, who made a splash a couple times last year. Josh Huff, who's more of a receiving option or a kick return option. Is there anything else that you want to mention on this team?
Well, not really. I mean, Adam Humphries is an interesting guy in deep leagues for PPR purposes. And DeSean Jackson's fine. He's pretty consistently solid, I guess. Yeah, like you said, the price is reasonable. He doesn't excite me very much.
Yeah, I'll just make one more shout-out to Charles Sims because I'm still intrigued by the talent. Jacquizz Rodgers was essentially out of the league for a little bit before last year. So there's certainly an avenue in which Sims could get a meaningful role and get kind of the Tevin Coleman type role as well, you know, where he's more of a receiving option and helping out the Buccaneers in that format or way. So Charles Sims is pretty much free right now. He's going actually a little bit in front of guys like Alvin Kamara, Jonathan Williams, DeAndre Washington. So, I mean, he's, you know, way down there in terms of the ranks, right behind Deion Lewis and Joe Williams. But he's worth maybe just keeping your eye on, especially as the preseason nears and the training camp and such, just in case, you know, he can kind of make a splash and maybe get some type of a role, especially if something happens to Jacquizz Rodgers. If something happens to Jacquizz Rodgers the first few weeks of the season, then you could see Sims pave his way to a really big role at the beginning of the season. So, all right, Eli, we have conquered the NFC South. I don't know how you feel, but I feel pretty accomplished right now.
Yeah, sure. Whatever.
Anyways, you want to tell people where you can be reached, anything you're working on nowadays?
You can find me on Twitter at EliFWFB, and I'm just working on about nothing, like usual.
How's The Bachelor going right now?
I haven't even watched this week's episode. I've really lost interest.
Well, you and I share a common love and theme for Big Brother, and I actually, you know, have not talked to you about Big Brother at all this year. So I'm going to ask you in the blind, in the dark, who is your guy or girl that you're rooting for?
Hey, Vey. I don't know. I'm just rooting for good TV. The first week was absolutely incredible. What a chaotic first week.
Yes, yes.
There's so many hateable people on the season, which I enjoy. It's fun to root against people. It's more fun to root against people than it is to root for people on that show. I feel like you always want the drama and the hookups and the blow-ups and the fights, and we've gotten a little bit of all that already, and it's looking to be a pretty great season.
Really attractive cast, too, in a lot of ways. So I'll give that.
All right, who's your girl?
Who's my girl?
Yeah, who's your girl?
I mean, obviously Jessica is model.
She's definitely the most attractive. She's the sexiest of the group, but she's also not the greatest human being, it appears.
She's not, and I think that plays a role in it as well. Honestly, I'm not that big a fan of Raven. I know she is attractive, and she obviously has a disease, which, you know, you really feel for her, and I think a lot of the house guests feel for her. But yeah, it's still Jessica. I don't really find Christmas that attractive inside or out, to be honest. I mean, she's got obviously like a fit ass body, so she's, you know, she's obviously stunning in that perspective, but I'm not really a fan of her personality. And the thing about Elena, who I find very attractive, is that she just, like, I don't know, she kind of plays Mark a bit. So I'm not a big fan of how she's kind of playing things with Mark. Yeah, Mark's the man. And that's Mark and Paul are who I'm really rooting for. I know everybody's rooting for Paul because he's returning and all that stuff. But I can't stand Josh. I can't stand Kevin. Kevin, I know, is like a favorite in the house and stuff, but he's a sleazeball, I can tell. I know that he's kind of playing everybody, and he's any 50 or 60 year old that's going to the tanning bed all the time, you need to be suspect of. And that's exactly what Kevin is. I know went on about a 10-minute rant on Big Brother.
I feel like Raven is two different people. When she wears her hair up in a bun, she looks like a 9-year-old girl and so dorky. But when she wears her hair down, she looks like really cute.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, to be honest, the women aren't that attractive this year. I mean, it's more so just Jessica. And, you know, other than that, I'm not really that, you know, into it. But from a guy perspective, no homo, I mean, Mark is ridiculous. Matt's like ridiculous. Matt is like what I would strive to be once my hair turns gray.
Yes, exactly. I agree on that front.
Like absolute stud. Obviously Cody, while he's equally as big of an asshole as he is pretty, I would say, he's, you know, good looking chap. Paul's obviously, you know, got the tattoo thing going on and the beard and that whole, you know, white James Harden thing. So, I mean, he's doing well in that department. And I think overall, like, they did a really good job for the male side of the cast. Alex, I totally forgot about Alex, though.
Yeah,
the girl,
cute.
Alex. She's definitely very cute. I think, like, from a personality standpoint, she really helps her case in that avenue as well. So, yeah, I'm really into Alex and Jessica. I'm not really that big of a fan of personality wise, but there's no denying the outside appearance.
Cody is just such great TV. I feel like I've never seen a reality TV character quite like him before. It's hard to find. There's been so many reality shows and so many seasons of Survivor and Big Brother that it's hard to find a new type of character that you haven't seen before. But this Cody is just like, I can't. He's unbelievable. I know he's a jerk and a horrible human being, but God, he's fun to watch.
Oh man, yeah, he's the biggest villain. I'm gonna put you on the block because I just flat out don't like you. Okay, well, that's a strong reason. I mean, he's just like completely insensitive of the situations, and I find it pretty awesome that he's in the situation he's in now based on that. But
do you think that he's playing a little bit of a character, or do you think is he playing up like the not having any emotion and like
I don't think he's playing it up. I think that he is being completely genuine, and I also think that's why he's going to be leaving the house the first few weeks of the year. So he probably will return, because if you're CBS, you just can't let somebody like that leave the program. Like, you have to bring him back, right? Like, at some point, he's going to have he might not come back, but he's going to definitely have the opportunity to come back at some point.
Perhaps so. They don't typically bring back people all that often.
Well, Victor came back, what, 4 times last year? So
well, yeah.
There's always a chance. Anyways, Eli, I think we probably lost a few listeners based on what we were just doing. But hey, we like some Big Brother, so sorry about that. But you can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB, like I said at the top of the show. If you want some free FWFB swag from Justin or myself, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or any of the other podcast forums, and we will hook you up. Definitely check out any of the other fantasy football podcasts we're doing. We also have a brand new team of writers and podcasters for this year, so they are doing some really good work, and I can't wait for y'all to listen and read them as well. Check out the baseball shows that we have going on. Also check out any of the football content that I write on friendswithfantasybenefits.com or fantasypros.com. And if you're into baseball, I also write on baseballhq.com as well. So for Eli and myself, thank you for listening, and good luck in your drafts. Never know.